Okay, I'm Chris Young, chairman of the Hong Kong Journalists Association, and I'm a working journalist as well.
Well, that's good because quite a lot of journalist associations, people are retired journalists, etc. But can you tell us about this incident this week with Choi Yuk Ling? I hope I pronounced it right because she is one of the top investigative journalists, or was, in Hong Kong.
She still is, of course, and she has done a lot of great investigative reporting with online media and also now with Radio Television Hong Kong, the public broadcaster, and some of which have won awards in international contests, including, say, stories about the July 21st Yuen Long attack last year in Hong Kong during the social movement.
Now, can you tell us her role in that attack? Because I understand that she got some very important evidence that there was some kind of collusion with the police and the attackers before the actual attack took place, which is a, one of the most explosive stories potentially. If you've got criminals colluding with police, now this is something obviously that the citizenry and politicians, the journalists, everybody really needs to know about. So, can you just tell us, take us through that incident and how she was involved back on the 21st of July last year?
Because of the late, say, action of the police, there has and is still now suspicious that the police and Triad had colluded, say, on that day, say, turning a blind eye to Triads who start, say, preparing for the attack in daytime. And the one, Bao Choi is one of the producers for this program. She did go into the footage in from CCTV around that area, and then got the number of cars, the number of car, the car plates, information, and did search about, say, details of the of those vehicles. And based on those information, including, say, addresses of those owners or people who registered with those articles, she doorstepped people and asked, were they there, what they were doing, and then went into background of those owners. So has well provided pretty useful information. Well, basically, I would say to give a more, say, evidence which, say, could suggest that there were a lot of underworld elements or triads involved in that attack.
Now, this almost sounds like some kind of James Bond movie. But can you tell us what is the actual reality behind these triad secret societies in China and Hong Kong? And are they bigger in China? Are they still existent in Hong Kong? What's the scale of this?
Well, it's difficult to tell. I think that's the question that a lot of people are asking, and journalists very often are trying to, say, get more into it. But it's not easy, I would say. And but we know that Triad's activities are still there, and particularly in what we call rural areas, where, say, there's a lot of land interests involved, and a lot of including, say, normal business activities and some other, say, which are less normal, or I would say, verging on, say, illegal activities involving with, say, drugs or other wise activities.
Okay, so given that the triads do exist, do they take a side when it comes to the disputes between Beijing and Hong Kong?
Well, traditionally they are patriotic, and maybe also for political reasons that they side with the Chinese Communist government, and the Chinese Communist government actually has been doing a lot of united front work here, and connecting with people from almost all backgrounds, business professionals, and including say those in rural areas, with a lot of land interests, and on also those with Chinese background. And indeed, a former say a public security minister in China, I think back in the 80s, 90s. When the issue of 1997 in Hong Kong was still up in the air, the Chinese government, that minister had made it quite clear that they could make friends with Trias and Trias elements. There are always patriots there, and they support the nation. They love the country, and so they did have some common interests and common thinking.
Yeah. So the other aspect of this is, I think, very interesting, is that there is either a politician or businessman. Maybe you can help me tell who he is. This guy called Junius Ho, who was photographed actually shaking hands with the triads after they had attacked hundreds of the pro-democracy demonstrators. Of course, at the time, it was really a demonstration against the extradition bill. Now, all the demonstrations are banned now. But who is this guy, Junius Ho? Because it does seem as if not only maybe the police were collaborating with the triads, but this guy too.
Well, that's the kind of a speculation, I would say, that's been circulating in town, that Junius Ho, a very outspoken but also very controversial lawmaker here. And I think he educated in UK and has a lawyer's background, but of course now I think his legal lawyer background, I think status has been challenged in UK. And I think that footage of him, shaking hands with some traditional rural leaders who are active in this area and allegedly involved with those right-sided persons. I think he's been trying to come clean, but not been able to do so far.
Well, I understand. He said, I was just happened to be passing by when I shook their hands. So anyway, where is the investigation going with the attack on the demonstrators? Because quite clearly, I mean, anyone that's seen the footage will be shocked. You've got guys dressed up in these white capes, these white costumes with metal bars attacking literally scores and scores of ordinary civilians as they come off the MTR, you know, the metro or the railway station at Yuen Long. How's the investigation going into who carried that out, why, and have there been arrests? Are people in jail?
Police have made arrests of dozens of people actually, and most of them are those are white shirt being identified, having been involved in those attacks. But they had also arrested what we call the black shirt persons, and including a pro-democracy legislators for being involved in what they call rioting in those areas. And that had been interpreted as a as a rewrite of history by the police that originally, I think most people define the case of, say, triad-related elements in right, attacking, say, civilians and passengers in those areas. But the police actually had a different interpretation, saying that it's a clash between two groups of people. There were quarrels, there were disputes, and then they were involved in the violence, say, assaulted. So they made arrests of people from both sides. And that's also a matter of great controversy, because that's not what, I would say most people say, define the case when.
Well, no, that's not what's in the film either. If you have a look at the footage shot, the film exactly. taken, it's not. It's really not anything but a one-way fight.
Yes, that's exactly. But they say, why it happened? Because there might be, say, incitement by those being attacked, and of course. I think those will be put to court, and the court will make judgment. And so far, of course, more people in right were arrested, but yes, there were other arrests of other persons, including those being attacked. One of them is a legislator. Yeah.
So with back to Choi Yuk Ling. With yeah. her, what is she actually being arrested for? Is it to do with somehow supporting the pro-democracy people, the protest against the extradition? Is that why she's been arrested?
Well, that's the most ridiculous part of this arrest, because she was arrested for making a false statement in a car plate search. She did a search of those vehicles for taking out to the bottom of truth of who were there, who owned that vehicle, were there during the attack. So what she did is just normal professionals reporting, investigative journalism. But because in the CarPlay search document, she had to fill in the form, picking from there the purpose of the search, and in the document there's no explicit item of for news reporting. But for other, say, business or just vehicle-related matters, so the police, seems to be making use of those technical requirements, and to make a prosecution, ignoring. The clear fact that she used the information for news reporting, which is in the public interest, and that's the most controversial part, and that's why journalists here are up in arms against it, because those CarPlay search is quite common. It's quite common for news reporting.
So what's the situation? I'm surprised that she would have to be arrested for that sort of thing. What's her situation? Is she free to go yet? What's likely to be her punishment?
Well, she had been released, put on bail, but then she will be formally attending, facing the charge on Tuesday, the coming Tuesday. On the charge of false statement under the road traffic ordinance, which to us is just ridiculous for journalists facing charge of under the road traffic ordinance for just entirely, say, normal news reporting work.
So can you tell us what it's like for journalists now in Hong Kong? I can imagine that it's never going to be easy if Beijing is slowly taking control. They are not known for their encouragement of free speech, and people in Hong Kong obviously are used to expressing their own opinion and, for example, pursuing stories like this. They may not be able to do that in the future. What's the general situation like for journalists and for journalism there?
Well, getting from bad to worse, and actually not slowly, but what happened since June last year, when the social movement erupted, followed by police brutality in handling journalists in public rallies, then the national security law took effect on July 1st. In which there are, say, provisions that could, say, put journalists in danger. And then a pretty broad statement saying that the government will should step up, say, a regulation of media. And many other related developments, for instance, more restrictions on the issuing of working visas for foreign media correspondents here. And then the latest, the arrest of a journalist under a pretty ridiculous road traffic ordinance, and quite rare in Hong Kong for a journalist being arrested. So to us, it's a kind of an all-round attack on media and limiting the room for free reporting in Hong Kong, more control. And that's part of the bigger picture of China intensifying their control over Hong Kong in the wake of what happened in the last 25 years, in particular the 2014 umbrella movement and then last year's social movement.
Well, some will say that much of this began with the arrest in Canada of Meng Wanzhou from Huawei, that the Chinese authorities were very annoyed about that. They didn't believe it was fair, it was right. And that's the only reason that the Chinese have really started to push with the national security law now. But previously, with the extradition law, they're really just mirroring what the United States is up to. And obviously, the US is getting quite aggressive in the South China Sea and in other ways in foreign policy. So, you know, if I was from the Chinese Communist Party, I would say, well, we are just responding to what the United States is doing.
Well, the Cold War between US and China is certainly one of the factors that has significantly changed the Communist Party's world will, and that certainly has an implication on how they or why they say harden their stance on Hong Kong. But there's also a very significant domestic factor that in the last 23 years after the 1997 handover, the developments in Hong Kong, or perhaps the way Hong Kong, say, goes under one country, there's a lot of things that China feels worried, feels angry. For instance, what they call the sentiments of young people. They would expect that new generations will, say, have stronger sense of identity or nationhood. But the opposite is true, that there's a pretty strong, say, sense of Hong Kong identity, and up to a point that what the Chinese fears as pro-independence thinking here. And and that Western or Western force element further complicates the Hong Kong, further complicates the Hong Kong issue. And they see what happened in Hong Kong as what they call color revolution, and Western forces say trying to say work with the local independent activists to trying to split Hong Kong, say separate Hong Kong, say from the rest of China. So that China-U.S. Cold War, say development, had just deepened their fears. And then cases like what you said, Meng Wanzhou, and that factor, I think, adds more controversy into the way they think about the world. So that's a factor, but not just one. A lot of things have happened, and unfortunately, I think being interpreted, seen as from the perspective of conspiracy by the Chinese communist government.
Have you found yourself, as you're writing, that you have to check what you say, Chris, because you're wondering whether what you're saying or what you're writing may break the law and you may yourself be arrested?
Well, I'm still writing as I have been doing, and I have no say. I'm not too worried about my own writing, but because of my role as chairman of the Hong Kong Journalists Association, almost over the last since June last year, I would say. The association, is in conflict, I would say, with the police and with the government on issues like police brutality, national security law, and now the latest about the arrest of a journalist. The association and myself have been named in a lot of this social media and single out for attack. My friends are worried, but I don't think I have the luxury to fear. I think I have to speak out and make comments, and otherwise things will get even worse.
Well, Chris, it's a terrific job you've taken on there, and maybe it's just sort of fallen in your lap. But ultimately, I mean, you're a very small part of a much bigger country now. And China is insistent that it will not allow free speech. Do you think in this David and Goliath battle that free speech can survive in, say, 20 years' time?
It's even difficult to say in 2 years' time, not to mention 20 years. I think our feeling is that we are just at the beginning of the most difficult battle, turning against the media. We are just at the very beginning of it. So what may happen, certainly things will still get worse. But we don't know how worse it could be and how soon it will get worse. Looking back on what happened since June last year, I think the certainty to us is that the things could happen or could get worse pretty short period of time. Unfortunately, that's the only uncertainty we can feel certain. We'll see how it goes, and certainly at least I myself believe that if we start say giving up or just and censor our work or our speech, it will only make things worse. it will not help.
Okay, Chris Young, thanks very much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
Cheers, Chris. I mean, just one thing, if you want to add, have you yourself got a place where people can read your work? Where's the best place to send people if they want to read your latest stuff or watch or listen to you?
Well, I write mostly in Chinese, although I write occasionally or weekly for the English Apple Daily. And I sometimes put my articles on my Facebook, and I can send you. And in fact, I have a website in English, and but I write occasionally on that. Now because I write mostly in Chinese. Yeah.
So you say you do a weekly column for somebody?
Or Apple Daily. Jimmy Lai's the Next Media Group's newspaper.
That again, was it Apple Daily?
Apple, yes, Apple Daily, and
Apple,
yes, yeah.
As in the fruit.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's the paper run by Jimmy Lai and Next Media Group, who was arrested. Say in August, in relating to national security law.
Fascinating. So you're learning fast about the triads. Crikey. Yes. Okay. Well, lovely to speak to you. Thanks very much, Chris. Take care.
Hey, you're welcome. Bye bye.
Cheers. Bye bye.
Bye bye.